2. Hører dere meg bak? Ja, det er bra. Ja. Still 2 minutes. Hello everybody, welcome to the first session in 2013 of the NIS lectures. I'm very glad to introduce this season of the series with a former PhD candidate from Høgskolen I Gjøvik. Geir Olav Dyrkolbotn has his PhD from Høgskolen I Gjøvik, graduated 2 years ago or something, mm-hmm. A year,
2011,
something there. he's a major in the Norwegian defense. He's been working for the defense since 1988. Among other things, he's been an instructor at the Norwegian Defense Signal Academy. He's here today to talk a bit about computer network defense, and we're very much looking forward to your slides.
Thank you. You can all hear me in the back? Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Nils. And thank you for the invitation. Since this is in English, I will use a manuscript, so if I don't look at you, please excuse me for that. I work in the Norwegian Armed Forces in a branch that, as of September 18th, 2012, changed its name to Cyber Defense, Cyberforsvaret in Norwegian. The headquarters, led by General Roar Sundset, is located at Jørstadmoen, Lillehammer. I am the head of a section for computer network defense, who are responsible for detecting, analyzing, and handling cyber incidents in military networks, and only military networks, just to stress that. I have worked in this field since 2003, while at the same time, as Nils mentioned, I took my PhD here at Gjøvik and NISLAB. This talk does not provide the answers, but will hopefully inspire a debate as to how we understand and approach certain aspects of computer network defense. A key for success is, in my opinion, collaboration, sharing experiences and information. This lecture is just one small contribution towards this goal. First, I would like to introduce Cyberforsvaret, or Cyfor, and our approach to cyber defense. I will talk a little bit about threats before I take you through the computer network defense procedures we use. Talking about computer network defense can quickly become very technical, and that is not my intention today, even though it cannot be avoided completely. But before I start, I would like for you to picture a group of soldiers on patrol, sent out to search for the enemy in the mountains or in the jungle if you don't like the cold weather. The soldiers are well-trained professionals. They know the terrain, maybe based on intelligence gathered before they set out. They may have altered or shaped the terrain to their advantage, built defensive strongholds or other defensive measures to steer the enemy activity in the direction they want. Eventually, the patrol makes contact with the enemy. What do we expect of them then? We certainly don't expect them to turn around, run, and cut contact, such that when they return and are asked for a report, they answer, "We don't know how many they were, how they were armed, or what they were doing. because we didn't take the time to observe them. Now, we expect them to act rationally according to the objectives of their mission. Maybe that will be to keep contact, don't reveal yourself, but observe. Or to keep contact, make sure they don't move north, try to direct them to the east. Or let them move forward, but delay their progress. Or it could also be stop them at all costs. Why do I mention this? It is my opinion that computer network defense is similar to patrolling at sea, in the air, or on land. I send cyber warriors out into the cyber domain every day, and relax only the military part of it. They patrol the cyber domain to establish a presence and to make contact with, i.e. challenge, whoever is out there that should not be there. And I expect the cyber warriors to react professionally and rationally when they make contact. I do not want them to pull the plug as soon as they detect an attack, but rather observe without revealing to the adversary that their cover is blown, and then coordinate their actions with military operations in the other domains. That said, let's move on with the talk. First, a few words about the Norwegian Armed Forces cyber defense. The development of Norwegian Armed Forces for the period from 2012 to 2016 was approved by Norwegian Parliament in June 2012. This document not only decided on an evolution of the former ENI command of the Armed Forces to the Norwegian Armed Forces cyber defense, which I will hereafter refer to as CIFOR, it also, and more importantly, acknowledged the cyber domain. This has implications for the Norwegian Armed Forces. On the one hand, the acknowledgement of a new domain is also the acknowledgement of a new threat, or a series of new threats. Our way of conducting military operations, of planning such operations, and our way of thinking of military operations needs to evolve. We have to include new factors and assessments into everything that we do. At the same time, the document formalized responsibilities for this new threat. CIFOR was given the responsibility for computer network defense and the resources required to do so. One of these resources, the section for computer network defense, is where I work. Information technology has changed the way we plan and conduct military operations. Information technology is an integral part of military operations, and risk to command and control systems must be evaluated and mitigated as an integral part of the plan and execution process. Rigid security processes that lean heavily on technical prevention measures are still important, but can also pose a lack of flexibility which reduces the effectiveness of our operations. Our approach is, therefore, to evaluate risk in an operational context rather than compliance-based context. Operational risk is found as the overlap between vulnerabilities, mission-critical assets, and threats. In this context, we use intelligence-based threat assessment rather than statistical threat predictions. As a result of this, the Norwegian Armed Forces is shifting its focus from secure networks to defendable networks as an essential fundament for effective computer network defense operations. Evaluating risk in an operational context also has implications for incident handling, as I will try to illustrate later. But first, the adversary. Who are we facing? Each year, a number of organizations give their security predictions for the next year. 2013 is no different. In the following, I refer to Kaspersky, which in my opinion captures the, for this talk, essential trends and predictions. Kaspersky states that threats are still dominated by non-targeted attacks going after personal information. However, targeted attacks searching for sensitive information that can be sold on the black market has gotten a firm foothold the last 2 years. Targeted attacks are very sophisticated, but often start with Hacking the Human, where employees are tricked into revealing information that later is used to attack the company. It is expected that 2013 will show an increase in targeted espionage attacks, and that this will pose the most significant threat to companies in 2013. Small businesses and organizations are expected to be used as stepping stones to attack larger organizations. 2012 also showed several politically motivated campaigns from, for example, Anonymous. The fact that society depends more than ever on the internet makes many organizations vulnerable to DDoS attacks as a political tool. Hacktivism as a politically motivated cyber attack is expected to increase. Flame and Gauss was revealed in 2012. These weapons confirmed that nation states have the capacity and intention of developing cyber weapons. It is expected that more countries will follow this trend in 2013 and develop cyber weapons for espionage and sabotage. Cyber weapons are not only targeting government and military, but also society in general through companies and critical infrastructure, such as power, finance, telecommunication, and transport. Our primary objective is defense against cyber weapons and targeted attacks aimed at our networks. Some military networks, however, are exposed to the internet, so we also have to deal with non-targeted attacks from organized cybercrime with mainly economic motives. This figure illustrates how organized cybercrime works. Cybercrime used to be a collection of individuals with little or no collaboration. Within the past few years, we've seen a move towards a more professional business model with highly specialized and professional groups run like any other business, offering and selling services amongst themselves or on a semi-open black market. Individuals or groups specialize in tasks such as malware development, building botnets, spam, collecting personal sensitive information, or collecting credit card information. Through internal collaboration, they can offer services such as industrial espionage, money laundering, illegal marketing, or exploit kits that promise to deliver any code you like to victims. I have seen them guarantee as many as 150,000 clients rerouted to infected servers if you purchase their products. Building the botnets may initially be non-targeted, as they are after volumes of computers, and it really doesn't matter which one they get a hold of. However, organized cybercrime is getting increasingly professional and possesses resources that is rivaled only by nation states. As Kaspersky point out, there is a shift towards targeted attacks also by cyber criminals, and in some cases, we see more information is collected than strictly needed for economic purposes. A growing concern is, what happens to computers that are identified as belonging to Company A, B, or from our point of view, the Norwegian Armed Forces? Another way of looking at it, why should someone expose themselves and spend resources on infiltrating computers when access to already infiltrated computers, botnets, are easily available for purchase? Keeping it simple is always a good first approach, and you don't expose yourself and your methods. This means that keeping non-targeted attacks with alleged economic motives under close watch is necessary in order to handle potential targeted attacks and potential stepping stones into our networks. Our greatest concern will, however, still be targeted attacks or cyber weapons developed by nation states. The computer network defense procedures we use to defend our networks are based on best practice by allies, large international organizations, and academic institutions, and is divided into six phases shown here: planning and preparation, collecting indicators, correlation and analysis, security incident handling, restoring and follow-up. It is a continuous procedure that requires collaboration between many different units within our own organization, but also collaboration with organizations outside the military, such as NORCERT. My section handles the detection, analysis, and correlation of indicators. We plan and coordinate security incident handling, and we carry out damage assessment. Planning and preparation. The planning and preparation phase is about building a defendable infrastructure and knowing your infrastructure or cyber landscape. An information advantage can be achieved by enhancing your own abilities, combined with removing or limiting the adversary's ability to use information and information infrastructure effectively. The information infrastructure as part of the cyber domain can be seen as a logic landscape that can be constructed, changed, and defended according to military objectives. CIFOR considered the following five areas essential for defendable infrastructure. The network should be monitored, controlled, minimized, current, and traceable. These areas are adapted from Richard Bechtlich, his book The Tao of Network Security Monitoring Beyond Intrusion Detection. I'll mention briefly what we mean by each of the five areas. A monitored information infrastructure is achieved by deploying sensors at critical points, in addition to logs from existing equipment in the network. Sensors can be intrusion detection systems and event management systems, CM systems. Equipment already in place can be firewalls, antivirus, system logs, etc. Efficient monitoring is achieved when information from all sensors and equipment is used to detect relevant indicators of reconnaissance or attacks. Preventive security measures will not detect everything. As an example, antivirus programs will, depending on who you ask, detect far less than 50% of known malware. Some claim the number is as low as 20%. And we are still only talking about known malware. Remember that we want to detect targeted attacks unknown to antivirus. Sensor deployment should be based on operational risk, as mentioned earlier. We then need technology in our own networks and vulnerabilities in it. We need intelligence about the threat and also how important the network or information on the network is for our current or upcoming operations. Since the operational risk is dynamic, deployment should also be dynamic. Therefore, we have a number of stationary sensors as well as tactical sensors that can be allocated when needed. Controlled. A defendable infrastructure has a control mechanism that will hinder the adversary in maneuvering freely within our network. Examples of such equipment are firewalls, virtual LAN technology, proxy solutions, system for perimeter and access control, authentication solutions, etc. Honeypots can also be used to exercise control. Minimized. The sum of all functions and services in the information infrastructure can be regarded as the attack surface, and specific vulnerabilities, the attack vectors. Due to the complexity, it is unlikely to remove all vulnerabilities. However, it is possible to reduce the attack surface by removing potential attack vectors that are not necessary in your network. For example, if you don't use Java, why is it installed on your computer? Current. Some functions and services have to be available. Since it is not possible to remove all vulnerabilities, it is important that the services are updated at all time. The most commonly used attack vectors are unpatched vulnerabilities, and in many cases, the patch is available, but not applied yet. Finally, traceability. The ability to trace an incident in a network requires a system for handling log data. This has to be planned ahead of time, as many critical logs are not stored in the units itself, but require centralized log collection and storage. An example is log generated by NAT units, network address translation units. These logs are essential in identifying which computers were involved in cyber attacks. Collecting indicators. Collecting indicators is a broad topic. It can be an alert user reporting that the PDF did not open properly or that a suspicious email was received. It can be an alarm triggered by antivirus or IDS. It can be tips from collaborating organizations or anomalies detected by an analyst monitoring the network. This is what we refer to as observations from a cyber warrior on patrol in cyber domain. Automatic detection by equipment like antivirus, IDS, CM, etc. is valuable, but against targeted attacks, they may fall short as the attacker is well aware of their limitations. In an article by Hutchins and others at Lockheed Martin, published in 2011, they captured the essence in our approach to dealing with one type of targeted attacks and can therefore serve as an unclassified source for discussing this topic. In their paper, the threat is a well-resourced and trained adversary that spends years conducting their campaigns. This threat is commonly known as Advanced Persistent Threat, or APT. The systematic process of targeting and engaging a network can be referred to as a kill chain. The kill chain for cyber espionage and cyber attacks, for example from APT, is by Hutchins and others divided into 7 phases. Phase 1, reconnaissance, research, identification and selection of targets. Phase 2, weaponization, create a deliverable payload, for example a PDF or a Word document. Phase 3, delivery, transmit the weapon to the target, and email attachment, websites, and USB are most frequently used. Phase 4, exploitation, execute delivered malicious code. Phase 5, installation, install remote access through, for example, a backdoor. Phase 6, command and control, compromised host must call home to establish a command and control channel. And finally, phase 7, actions. Finally, actions to achieve the objective can be taken. This may include data exfiltration, violate integrity or availability, or it could be to establish a foothold for penetration deeper into your network or into the physical world, for example, SCADA systems. Understanding the chain of actions necessary to launch an attack gives us many more chances of detecting an attack, as each phase will generate unique indicators. In addition, the adversary will most likely reuse techniques in subsequent attacks. The cost of reinventing each phase every single time an attack is launched is usually too high, even for government-funded cyber weapons. A benefit for the defender is that even zero-day attacks can be detected if the adversary reuses some phases in the kill chain. Correlation and analysis. This part is about establishing the consequences and intent of detected attacks. I will again point to the paper by Hutchins and others to illustrate 2 important aspects, analysis and synthesis. When an attack is detected late, let's say in phase 6, the command and control phase, analysis is carried out to find out as much as possible about what happened. This information can and should be used to defend against future attacks. As mentioned, it will force the adversary to change exposed phases of their intrusion. Not as obvious, but equally important, when detection happens early, it may be tempting to think, no harm done, let's not waste resources on this and look for the next attack instead. This approach will leave you open for future attacks, as all the adversary has to do is change the face you detected. Instead, you should synthesize what would have happened in later phases if the intrusion had been successful. This gives you a tactical advantage over this particular adversary, as they have to change everything to get past you. Analysis and synthesis of all phases can also be used for campaign analysis, i.e. to determine patterns of behaviors specific to each adversary. This can be used to evaluate capabilities, doctrines, objectives, limitation, and ultimately their intent. Incident handling. This phase is about developing a course of action, what we call an operational plan, and to coordinate incident handling between all relevant participants. For example, at the highest level in the armed forces, coordinating defensive and offensive measures to establish an information advantage and increase the effect of traditional military operations. At my level, incident handling is about how the patrol in cyberspace react when detecting the adversary. And initially, it is important to observe without revealing that the attack is detected. This gives us the opportunity to collect information about their intention, capacity, and limitations, and hopefully deduce their most likely and most dangerous course of action. And this is our input to the incident handling phase. I won't go into detail about different courses of action this time, but can mention that this may include deny, disrupt, degrade, deceive, destroy, and probably many more. But it has to be an integral part of our current military operations. Finally, when the operation has been carried out, it is time to re-establish a secure state in our network. This includes re-tanking any infected clients or servers and strengthening our defenses such that similar attacks in the future are detected and handled as early as possible in the mentioned kill chain. So I don't know if I have inspired anyone, but I hope that we can have an open discussion about some of these topics, either now or in the future. And that concludes my lecture, and I'm open for questions, I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Geir Olav. You have to be a little bit disciplined using the mic, just in order for those who follow us online. For those of you who are online, you can see a Twitter address where you can also post the questions, and we will try to at least address a couple of them in the session here. Are there any questions from the auditorium? We can start down here in the beginning.
I promised one.
Yes.
one of the things that I was missing based on your introduction was you talk about detection, but there was no mention at all about attribution. And if we use the analogy of a patrol, wouldn't it be nice to find out who has fired at you in this context? So that seems to be missing in
I'm sorry, I can't cover everything in a short time, but yes, it's a very important aspect of this, and as you, many of you hopefully know, that then finding out who attacked you on internet is, yeah, so some people say it's impossible because you can use any IP address you want. But if you look at the kill chain that I mentioned here, individuals or groups will have unique ways of implementing these different phases. So to collect information here and build a database that you can later use to find out who this attack, have I seen it before, does it belong to a certain group, is very important. Did I answer your question, or is it... We could probably talk about that for a long time, but yes, you're certainly touching something really important.
Yes, thank you. My question is related in terms of the concept of non-targets and targets. Now, one of the things we have in cyber world, we have soft targets and we have hard targets. Now, most of the time when we're attacking infrastructure, these are, to some extent, soft targets. How do you deal with the situation, say, with a soft target? And do you have some work when it comes to honeypots and soft targets? Do you understand the question?
Then I first need to know here, what is your, how do you, what is a soft target and a hard target in the way you see it? Give me an example of a soft target.
Say my grandmother's PC at home is a soft target.
Okay.
As opposed to an access control system in a military base.
Okay. And your question, how do we deal with soft targets? Is that what you're...
How do you monitor? Do you monitor soft targets?
Yes, yes, we do. And well, let me just stress something that I hope I make clear. We are not looking at anything outside the military systems. But, of course, we have employees that use computers in our system for private purposes. So if that can be a soft target, then yes. I can give you an answer. We have to follow them, and for more than one reason. One is that that soft target can be used as a stepping stone to breach our classified systems. You get a foothold there, and we know that the, you know, I don't have it here, but the USB memory stick, people are not good at using it in the right system only, so they put it in there, they put it in a different system. Or I'm sure most people have smartphones, they take a smartphone, plug it into their unclassified computer, charge it. Next time they're at the classified computer, they want to charge their cell phone and they don't think, and they plug it into the USB port, and then you have built a bridge from the soft unclassified target to the military system. But there's also another aspect of this that we sometimes like to mention, is that why is it relevant for the military if somebody hacks your bank account and steals your money? It seems like that's something we shouldn't think about. But I like to say that if we have soldiers in Afghanistan that are due to go out on a mission, and they have to sit there and think about all their money that are disappearing and how their family are going to get the bills paid that month, I don't think their focus is on their mission and what they really should be thinking about. So in that respect, it also is important to us.
Okay, thank you.
Long answer, but yeah.
Then there's a question from online from the Gjøvik University Security Catch the Flag team. I don't know who posting there. To what extent does the cyber defense cooperate and collaborate with foreign nations and non-governmental search?
What was the question? Who we collaborate?
To which extent, I guess, and who of the non-governmental search and the foreign nations are you collaborating in your work?
Yes, of course. I don't know how specific I can be, but of course it's like I said, we're exposed to whatever goes on the internet, so where it's important to collaborate with basically anyone that's doing the same job as us on different parts of the cyber domain. And we do have collaboration with our military counterparts in other countries, of course. Like I said, NORCERT is coordinating all incident handling in Norway. So we, of course, collaborate with them every single day. But also other, any tips from companies that, hey, we've seen this in our network, do you see it in yours? So it's also a way of catching these guys earlier. So without naming anybody, then I haven't forgotten anybody either. So,
thank
you. I answered the question.
Offense is often the best way of defending yourself.
Yes.
You're doing analysis and synthesis to more or less be prepared for new attacks. Mm. In what, up to what level do you also use that information to track your attackers and make sure that they don't attack you anymore?
Well, now you're talking about how we the different courses of action we have, and that will depend on the situation. But so what I tried to stress in this talk is, let's at least, in my opinion, at least start with not pulling the plug, because then you're blind, and you free up the resources for these guys to do something else, and you need to look for them again. You don't know where they hit next time. But then, of course, paying attention to them and keep observing them, that also ties up their resources. You have tied up some resources they can't use anywhere else. And then if you ask, can we take away their ability to do something like this in the future? Yes, we can do it by strengthening our detective capabilities. But there's also talks about doing more... I don't want to use the word aggressive, but direct methods. And there's computer network attacks is of course an area, but that is outside what I deal with, and certainly outside what I can discuss here today. But of course, that's every nation that has computer network defense capabilities are also talking about the other side. And it makes sense to talk about it. So.
Thank you. I have a question regarding defendability.
Yes.
Of networks. So you say you don't concentrate on secure networks, but on defendable networks. And
yep.
One aspect of that is what you have mostly talked about, and that's intrusion detection. But what about prevention? So can you tell us something about activity to prevent attacks?
Yes, for us the preventive part is tied up in these five areas, because this is about building a network that using preventive measures to build a network where you can actually detect what's going on. The idea is that you cannot build a network that is 100% secure. So of course you use preventive measures, you design your network after these principles, and that gives you a baseline of preventive measures. But there's always a gap that you cannot cover, and that's what we tried to cover with the computer network defense, the rest of the sensor, the monitoring bit there, try to capture the things that the preventive systems can't handle. But there is a baseline here that is very important. So everything that you teach about prevention is not out the window. It's still a very important part of building the networks. But we have come to the realization that you can't build your way out of these problems. You need some way to handle the risk that is left when you're done with the preventive systems, and that's the sensors and the analysts and trying to find these targeted and non-targeted attacks. Did I at all answer your question? we can talk more afterwards.
More questions from them.
Yeah, hi. I'm curious about what's the difference here between the cyber defense and elektronisk krigföringsoperatör, like the, is that like the offensive team and you're the defensive team here, or?
I'm sorry, yes, I'm the defensive team, but what was your question?
Yeah, then? But if we're going to go in offense, would that be for the E-Battalion, like elektronisk krigföringsoperatör in that part, or?
That is something that I'm not comfortable going online and answer, but
okay.
we can talk about it after.
Yep.
Afterwards.
Right. Fair enough.
Right. But my job is purely defensive. That's
all right. Yeah. Cheers.
Can you tell us a little bit about load balancing? I mean, load balancing, you have certain fixed resources. I assume you're increasing your resources. I assume attacks are increasingly observed. Now, the process that you described in analyzing an attack and deducing the intention of the attacker, that takes time. What mm-hmm. How do you handle if you have more attacks than
more resources?
Yeah, you ask for more resources. Your management, that's the obvious response.
I'm sure you knew that before you asked the question. So, very good question, and that is one of the hardest things in this. We have started talking about. I talked a lot about targeted attacks. And so we have started a little bit to talk about targeted defense because we realize that we can't cover everything. One way of that we approach this is through we have a method for risk assessment that we call operational security. And what we try to do there is deduce what is really important to protect, because we can't protect everything. And let's take the DDoS attack against Sweden that was, I'm sure you saw in the media. Somebody asked us, could this happen to the Norwegian military? And the obvious answer is yes, of course. But the good question is, does it matter? Does it have any impact on the operations that we carry out? Is it important if that server goes down? And that's the approach that we try to take in order to select where we put in our resources, limit the resources. So
This is a practical type of question. You're just building up, as I say, it's June last year that you built it up, but do you think it's easier to take a soldier and turn him into a computer scientist, or take the computer scientist and turn them into a soldier?
So who do you want me to offend?
No. I mean
it's not very difficult to answer that. Both are important, but I think that with the speed of things changing in the cyber domain, the technical aspect of this is the most difficult to handle. We've been asked, can you deploy a cyber capacity somewhere? And we thought, what is a cyber capacity? Is it a IDS? Is it a box? Is it a vehicle with that box? How many kilos? But the answer is knowledge. What's inside people's head? Without skilled people that know the cyber domain, we're helpless. So I think the technology aspect is the answer.
So
now I offended all the soldiers. So.
But do you think we have a situation in base camp or boot camp that every soldier is going to have a cybersecurity base camp before we ship them off to Afghanistan?
We already have a small part of it, so they all get a small security briefing, if you will, but how much and how deep, that's
we don't.
Yeah, from my perspective, they can never get enough, but they have many other things they have to learn too. So
okay, thank you. So that means everybody should take a bachelor's at Jøvik first before they go into
yes, of course.
Of course.
So now that's on the web too, right?
Okay, we have a couple of more minutes for some final questions. Yes.
Thank you. I have a question, and actually my question is a little bit long, because in one conference that was a person responsible for securing the network for George W. Bush. And he was telling that we made it completely secure network, and after that the evaluation team they didn't find anything from our network. but they found all of the plan, for example, which helicopter, which time, and everything from the travel of George W. Bush from outsource companies that they were connected to us. Yeah. So what's your solution for outsource? Okay, we
you
have
want
a
to solve that problem right here now.
Secure network in military, but probably we are connected to another companies too. What's your solution for that one? Thank you.
Yeah, I wish I had a quick fix for that, but I don't. That is a challenge, and to me, it seems like there's always going to be a balance between your security measures and the flexibility of the what you want to actually obtain using the system. And you can't have both things. The short answer is that back to what we try to do is to in every single situation we try to not enforce security features and measures on the commanders out there. We try to tell them what is the risk if you do this, what is the risk if you don't do this, what if you implement this, then yeah, this is going to limit you, but you remove this risk. But then we leave it up to that commander to make the choice, because sometimes it might be operational necessary to go ahead without implementing the security measures. The side effect of that, of course, is that sometimes you lose information, and I think that's the hardest realization right now, is to accept that our systems are not 100% secure. We're going to lose information once in a while, but as long as you lose less than the opponent, so you have what we call an information edge, then it's okay. So that wasn't an answer to your problem, but at least that's how we try to address problems like that.
Is there some unclassified information about statistics?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
Do you have some unclassified statistics for us?
What statistics are you?
All kinds of statistics. Something that you can give us.
Not that I have prepared for today. So, okay. Unless you're more specific.
Okay, we will take it offline.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Let's thank Geir Olav again and for answering all our questions. Thank you, Geir Olav. And thanks for all of you showing up. Next NIST lecture is in 4 weeks or something from now. The invitation is already here on the table and out on the web, so just start signing up again. Geir Olav will be available for those who want to join us in the cafeteria for a coffee or just have a coffee here, as long as we can that again. So please just join us afterwards. Okay, thank you. Have a nice weekend.